Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy, of advancing education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
We will continue on a remorseless mission to squeeze Russia from the global economy piece by piece, day by day, and week by week.
One thing, of course, we could also do is to make an open and unconditional offer to Ukrainian refugees to house them in the United Kingdom.
We haven't seen all of what Putin's going to do at the moment. We do not know what his end goal is.
You're listening to Bloomberg Westminster, your daily guide to British politics. I'm Ewan Potts.
Good afternoon, I'm Stephen Carroll. Today's programme a little different than usual. That's as voters in Tiverton and Honiton and Wakefield go to the polls today in two by-elections.
So that means for a change we'll be bringing you some of our best interviews of the week from outside the world of politics.
Coming up, we'll be hearing from Bloomberg's exclusive conversation with Elon Musk. And we'll be discussing the UK trial of the four-day working week.
Meanwhile, it's the second day of major strike action this week on Britain's railways. Some 40,000 workers are walking off the job in a dispute over pay and conditions. The RMT union is pressing for higher pay and a commitment to no compulsory redundancies. But talks on Wednesday didn't find an agreement with the UK's 13 train operating companies and government-owned track and stations operator Network Rail.
So as a result, just one in five trains are running around Britain today, with services that are starting later and finishing earlier. Special arrangements have been put in place to cater for those heading to the Glastonbury Festival.
While the 20th century created the five-day working week as we know it, is the 21st century going to see us working fewer days, especially after the pandemic? Well, the UK is conducting the biggest experiment yet of a four-day working week. Thousands of workers from 70 companies are taking part in a six-month trial, which starts this month.
There are also pilot schemes taking place in Ireland, the United States, Canada, Australia and New Zealand. Earlier, Carolyn Hepburn and I spoke to the woman spearheading the project, Charlotte Lockhart, Managing Director and Founder of 4 Day Week Global.
The goal is to reduce work time, but not without a focus on productivity and without and certainly not including reducing pay.
Okay, why does a 4 day work week help business?
So what we teach our businesses when we take them through the pilot program is focus in on what is your productive outcome that you truly need. Be clear about that and communicate it well. Agree it with your people. And so therefore, what we're looking to do is keep your business as productive, but allow your people to go home. Now, it is about well-being, but it is also recognizing that the business needs to remain productive.
How are you hoping to measure, what data are you hoping to produce then from trials to be able to prove that case?
So on the productivity side of things, we allow businesses to choose the measures that best suit them. You're going to improve something that you're measuring in a way that suits you. But there are standard productivity measures that we also include in there. So we have a research project that the framework is designed out of Boston College by Dr. Juliet Shaw. And it is here in the UK being activated by Cambridge University. We also have Oxford University looking at elements of it for us. And in our Canadian and US pilot, second of which is happening later in the year, that is run out of Boston College.
Yeah, absolutely. So the trial here in the UK is between June and November. As you say, there are pilot schemes in other parts of the world. What has been the feedback that you've had so far? I mean, is it working? Post-pandemic, we've seen the great resignation. Now this big experiment with the four-day work week. What are companies and individuals telling you?
Well, so interestingly, the UK is a market where there are thousands of companies doing this already. There's been high uptake for it. And even in our pilot program, we did have 3,300, but one of our companies has decided to put another 5,000 employees onto the program. So after going through the scoping of it, they've decided that it's quite possible for them to add more of their employees in. So this is what companies are finding. And what we expect the research to show us is that this is the best team building exercise that you will ever do. And most business owners, one of the things they say is, they say two things. One is it's easier than you think, and it's the best thing they've ever done.
That was Charlotte Lockhart, Managing Director and founder of 4-Day Week Global, speaking to us on Bloomberg Radio earlier.
Now, if you're involved in Westminster politics, you'll know how the bubble thrives on Twitter drama. So now let's turn to the person who's trying to buy the social media platform, someone who definitely doesn't work a 4-day week, and that is Elon Musk.
He spoke exclusively to Bloomberg's editor-in-chief, John Micklethwaite, at the Qatar Economic Forum, the Tesla founder joining the event via video conference. Now, the two covered a wide range of topics in their conversation, including Musk's stance on cryptocurrencies, the competition facing Tesla for electric vehicles from traditional car makers like Volkswagen, and how artificial intelligence could be regulated.
But the conversation started with a question about his bid to buy Twitter. Here's Elon Musk speaking to John Micklethwaite.
There's a limit to what I can say publicly, given that it is somewhat of a sensitive matter. So I will have to be measured in my responses here, such as not to generate incremental lawsuits.
That seems to be a risk you sometimes manage to overcome.
Yes, deposition minimization is, I think, important.
Have Twitter given you enough information?
Well, there are still a few unresolved matters. You've probably read about the question as to whether the number of fake and spam users on the system is less than 5% as Twitter claims, which I think is probably not most people's experience when using Twitter. So we're still awaiting resolution on that matter, and that is a very significant matter. We're awaiting resolution on that. And then, of course, there is the question of will the debt portion of the round come together, and then will the shareholders vote in favor? So I think those are the three things that stand in the that need to be resolved before the transaction can complete.
What about the general state of the economy? Does that weigh on you when you think about this? I mean, you just described it, you have a super bad feeling about the economy. Are you still in that position? I just said to you earlier, Joe Biden has just come out and said that a recession in America is not inevitable. How do you feel about the economy?
Well, I think a recession is inevitable at some point. As to whether there is a recession in the near term, I think that is more likely than not. It certainly isn't. It's not a certainty, but it appears more likely than not. And what do you think?
I'm with you. I agree with you. I think it's more likely. Can I ask you one particular thing to do with the Twitter bid, which is, you are one of the biggest and fastest growing investors in China. Tesla, you've talked about it being a third of your sales going forward. You're now buying Twitter, the kind of public forum for free speech. The Chinese historically don't tend to be very enthusiastic about free speech. Are you worried about whether you can keep those two particular horses running? Is buying Twitter going to get you in trouble with the Chinese?
Well, Twitter does not operate in China.
Yes.
So, and I think China does not attempt to interfere with the free speech of the press in the U.S. As far as I know, because I assume you're not under pressure at Bloomberg from China. So I think there's... I don't think this is going to be an issue.
And in terms generally of that issue of freedom of speech and Twitter, you've talked about Twitter making it even freer and letting more people onto it. Is there a limit at all to who you think should be allowed onto Twitter?
Well, my aspiration for Twitter, or in general for the digital town square, would be that it is as inclusive, in the broadest sense of the word, as possible. That it is an appealing system to use. So, I mean, ideally, I'd like to get like 80% of, let's say, North America, and perhaps, I don't know, half the world or something, ultimately, on Twitter in one form or another. And that means it must be something that is appealing to people. It obviously cannot be a place where they feel uncomfortable or harassed, or they'll simply not use it. So, I think there's a big difference between freedom of speech and freedom of reach, in that one can obviously, let's say in the United States, go in the middle of Times Square and pretty much yell anything you want, and you'll annoy the people around you, but you're kind of allowed to just sort of yell whatever you want in a crowded public place, more or less. apart from this is a robbery, probably that would get you in trouble. But then whatever you say, however controversial, does not need to then be broadcast to the whole country. So I think generally the approach of Twitter should be to let people say what they want to do within the bounds of the law, but then limit the, who sees that based on the any given Twitter user's preferences. So if your preferences are to see anything, or read anything, then, well, you'll get that. And if your preferences are, well, you prefer not to see, comments that you find offensive in one form or another, then you can have that as a setting and not see it. And, but I think one way or another, one needs to take the steps that, that entice most people to want to be on Twitter and enjoy it and find it informative and entertaining and funny, and just something and useful, as useful as possible.
It sounds like you want to be involved. Is your plan to be CEO of Twitter? And if you do that, would you still keep being CEO of Tesla and SpaceX?
I would drive the product, which is what I do at SpaceX and Tesla. So I drive the product and technology. Whether I'm called the CEO or something else is much less important than my ability to drive the product in the right direction.
Can you set the record straight on one thing, which is this issue about the layoffs? I think you said initially that Tesla, 10% of the workforce would be cut, then 10% of salaried would be cut, then salaried would stay flat and overall headcount would go up. What is the number? I know there's already, I think, been a lawsuit about the 10%. Is 10% the goal to reduce the workforce? Or what is the number that we should think about or that you're planning?
Yes. So Tesla is reducing the salaried workforce by roughly 10% over the next probably 3 months or so. We expect to grow our hourly workforce. I was quite clear that we expect to grow our hourly workforce, but we grew very fast on the salaried side, and we grew a little too fast in some areas, and so it requires a reduction in the salaried workforce. And we're about 2/3 hourly and 1/3 salary. So I guess technically a 10% reduction in the salaried workforce is only roughly a 3.5% reduction in total headcount.
I think that number is important legally, isn't it? Because I think people are trying to say if you're going to lay off 10% of your workforce, you have, even in America, to make an announcement about that.
We did make an announcement. Yes. Let's not read too much into a preemptive lawsuit that has no standing. That is a small lawsuit of minor consequence. That just anything that related to Tesla gets big headlines. But it is whether it is a bicycle accident or something much more serious. It seems like anything related to Tesla gets a lot of clicks, whether it is trivial or significant. I would put that lawsuit you're referring to in the trivial category. So a year from now, I think our headcount will be higher in both salaried and obviously in hourly. But in the short term of the next few months, we expect to see, like I said, roughly a 10% reduction in salaried workforce, which is actually just really only a 3.5% reduction in total headcount, and not super material.
Should we jump to that third Elon Musk, the uncontroversial one in politics? You've indicated that the Florida governor, Ron DeSantis, is someone you could get behind if he ran for president. I wondered if you're still in that position and whether you would, for instance, think about supporting Donald Trump if he were to run.
Well, I was simply asked if I decided on who I would be supporting in the next presidential race. And I said I had not decided who I would support. Then I was asked, well, who might you be leaning towards? I said possibly DeSantis.
And now I'm asking you about Trump, whether you would consider him.
I think I'm undecided at this point on that election.
I wondered, you talked about putting money behind a super moderate super PAC in the US.
Yes.
And I wondered, how much money do you think you're going to put into that? What kind of support would you push?
I have not decided on an amount, but it would be some non-trivial figure, I think. I mean, at least sort of on the order of...
Non-trivial could mean a lot with you.
Sorry?
Non-trivial could mean a lot of money with you, I was guessing.
Well, I don't know. I have not decided on the exact amount, but... perhaps it would be $20 or $25 million.
Just on that issue, I mean, again, you look at DeSantis says, you look at what Trump says, and those sort of politicians, they, again, are people who make a large noise about China. And I wondered whether you thought that was also an issue for you in terms of business in China.
Well, no, I don't think so.
You're a brave man. Can I ask you, over the weekend, you tweeted your support of one cryptocurrency. You've seen the kind of carnage that has been happening in cryptocurrencies at the moment. What is happening, and do you still think people should invest, or is it a more selective approach?
Well, I have never said that people should invest in crypto. In the case of Tesla, SpaceX, myself, SpaceX and Tesla and myself all did buy some Bitcoin, but it's a small percentage of our total cash and near cash assets. Not all that significant. I also bought some Dogecoin. And Tesla accepts Dogecoin for some merchandise, and SpaceX will do the same. And I intend to personally support Dogecoin because I just know a lot of people who are not that wealthy who, you know, have encouraged me to buy and support Dogecoin. So I'm responding to those people, just people that when I walk around the factory at SpaceX or Tesla, they've asked me to support Dogecoin, so I'm doing so.
Because Dogecoin, I think, has come down a lot. It's down about 80-90%, or it's down a lot, and that's the reason why you came out and said that you still thought there was value there.
I said I support Dogecoin, and I'm doing that.
Can I ask you one last question? Is I noticed that you're going to... unleash a humanoid robot to be unveiled on September the 30th. I wonder if there's anything more you could tell us about that.
Well, I hope that we will have an interesting prototype to show people. We have a very talented team at Tesla that I'm working with closely to have a prototype humanoid robot ready by the end of September. And I think we are tracking to that point. So that, and there'll be a few other exciting things that we talk about at the Tesla AI Day. But I really want to, you know, we have these sort of AI Day events to just emphasize that Tesla is a lot more than a car company, and that we are, in my view, the leading real world AI company that exists.
Were you? Did you see at all the drama about at Google, where people, at least one engineer, thought that what was happening in terms of their AI machinery was closer to human thought than had been seen before, and quite worrying, had a personality. Is that something that you think about at all, or you worry about?
I think we should be concerned about AI, and I said for a long time that I think there ought to be an AI regulatory agency that oversees artificial intelligence for the public good. And I think just as there's anything that, for anything that where there is a risk to the public, whether that's the Food and Drug Administration or Federal Aviation Administration, Federal Communications Commission, where there is a public risk or public good at stake, there it's good to have sort of a government referee and a regulatory body. And I think we should have that for AI, and we don't currently. And that would be my recommendation.
That was Elon Musk speaking to Bloomberg's editor-in-chief John Micklethwaite at the Qatar Economic Forum.
Well, that's it for today's show. Tomorrow, we'll be back discussing politics, and we'll bring you the results of those by-elections in Tiverton and Honiton and in Wakefield. This is Bloomberg.
Is realizing the full value of your network just a dream? Intel is bringing AI everywhere, building solutions to help modernize and monetize 5G infrastructure, making it possible for telecommunications providers to expand services and drive efficiency by reducing costs and saving energy. The next wave of networks starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal wherever you get your podcasts.
And watch on Bloomberg Originals, Bloomberg Television, or BTV+.